My heart is in Ireland, it's fair unto thee. For hill and her valley are calling to me. So born here in this land, my heart is in Ireland, the land of the old folk is calling to me.
And founder, and they'd one of the founders of the Wolf Tones, we're delighted to welcome as we head over to Dublin and to Brian Warfield, the composer.
Hello,
how are you? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We just had a great win there against Wales.
We're lucky to get you at all. Yeah.
It's all over and over now, I tell you.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic game.
Nothing like going with, a win like that. If you, you would know that to feel bad for Wales and the Welsh team or not, but today wouldn't be the day to bring it up anyway. You're welcome and very welcome. And we know, can you bring us back to 1963 and Inchicore in Dublin, and you're getting a couple of musicians together to form what would be a Guinness Book of Records, absolutely amazing history in Irish music and traditional Irish music, and in developing the brand of the Wolf Tones.
Yeah, well, it goes back a long time, as you know, but I was very enthusiastic, and always very enthusiastic about Irish music. I loved it. It was deep-seated in the family as well, because my grandfather was a great entertainer and singer, and he loved the Irish song and the Irish music, and he was the one that instilled that love of music into me, at least. But, I always wanted to play it and sing it, and we went out across the flat hills in Ireland over the years, and we learned, we picked up songs, we learned music, and we kept developing and developing and developing. And at one stage, we got, I think it was about 1964, we got a manager from Norway. He was living in Ireland, and he had a business in Ireland doing those AeroView postcards to send around the place. And he became our manager, and soon after that, we got a record contract. And the record contract was for 5 years, 5 albums, and that was with Fontana Records in England at the time. They're a big, big company, and it was amazing that we got this fabulous contract. But we're probably one of the few in Ireland who got it at that stage. And, you know, there was the Tansy Brothers over in America, but indeed we were based in Ireland and one of the first to get a big contract. So that was a great start for the Wolf Tones. And then, of course, we got recognized through our records and became very, 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 very famous around through our recordings. And I couldn't believe it when I got, when we got over to New York in 1966, our first visit to America. And Dorothy Haven, as you might remember, had a show there, and she brought
had the show. Yeah,
I couldn't believe. Yeah, and I couldn't believe that that people knew our music over in America, which they did. And we played the City Center, and we played out in Queens, and all around the place back then. But it was a fabulous experience for us.
Yeah,
I fell in love with New York and New Yorkers, and I'm in love with them ever since.
Well, I think the feeling is mutual. I just since you brought up Dorothy Hayden's name. Now, she took over the tradition and the program of her father, Charlie Hayden, who initially had about the only Irish program in New York. And it was a program dedicated mostly, again, to the playing of music. But it wouldn't surprise me, you know, that arriving in New York and hearing the Wolf Tones, because I think there was a segment of our community, a big swath of our community, that liked the fact that your songs didn't just come out of nowhere, that they had that mix that other groups did not find comfortable, and that you brought, you were known that time pretty much as the rebel band, you know, the leader of the rebel at a time when music, kind of over here anyway, didn't any of the rebel music, you know, was old. You brought a new and fresh, rendition and composition, which brings us to, you know, it's now 60, almost 60 years later, and you still have, you know, the original members of the band, like Brian, yourself, Norm Nagel and Tommy Byrne, the guts of the Wolf Tones. Go ahead.
Myself, Tommy and Noel have been great friends, you know, back from the earlier days. And, my passion at least was to bring the story of Ireland across the world, which I have. And I think it's very important to tell the story in its entirety, because we have a great history and a wonderful background, and we've had wonderful leaders over the years, and they should be all remembered. So this year, it being the 175th year anniversary of the terrible hunger of 1847, I wanted to bring to the fore the story of that famine. And it wasn't a famine, as we all know. There was plenty of food in Ireland, enough to feed double its population. But it was taken away by gunpowder. And I think that's the sorrow about Ireland. We had enough food to feed us, but we had no control over it. So it was exported all across the world. I've written a song, actually, about this, about that particular event for the upcoming show. And it's the story of, the ship. I call them the ships of shame. And that's the title of the song. And it was a shame that all this food was being exported, where Ireland was crying with hunger, bleeding with hunger, bleeding its people, our people dying one by one. But I put that all into a song in a kind of a, in a way that, when you write a song, it's not like writing a book. You need that much detail in it. So you have to be very, very concise about what you say and the way you say it.
Yeah.
Because the way you say it will cover the, the whole story and get people into the idea that what happened. And then hopefully it brings them on to a point where they read more about it. And I think that's the importance of the Wolf Tones. Like we've gone all over the world and gone to countries where, little English would be spoken or anything like that. But they still get the whole, they get the whole story of the music through the passion, through the way that it's sung, the way that it's presented. And, we've gone to Norway, Sweden, we've gone to Denmark, we've gone to the big festivals there in Skagen, and all around Germany, of course, Holland, Spain, Italy, we've been there. But all the peoples of the world have been found and find the Irish story very, very interesting. And everybody knows about the Irish story. Now, according to what I've read of Irish history, I don't regard my songs as rebel songs. I regard them as storytelling songs. Now, I wouldn't leave, I have another song that I have written for this show, and it's about John Mitchell. Now, John Mitchell was one of the leaders during the time of the Great Hunger. And as you know, you were sent, first of all, to Bermuda, a hulk in the harbour of Bermuda. And then they moved them on to the Cape, and after the Cape, they moved them on to Tasmania. So there's a big story to tell here, and the story is just, I have a passion to tell this story.
Yeah.
And the show is like, for the first half of the show, it's all songs of that period. We will open up, I've written a kind of a long poem, which I put to music, and it tells the story of the particular time of 1847. And that story is, I think, when you hear it, you'll understand what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
The full story in poem.
You know, my guest is, cutting over you there.
Yeah,
my guest friend is Brian Warfield, founding member of the Wolf Tones, a composer, an Irish historian, an author, you know, a playwright. Your immersion in, you know, in music and song and storytelling, again, it isn't from the wind you took it, but how much information did you learn, say, in school, and this is not an idle question, about the famine when you were indeed growing up? To answer my question that hasn't been answered, by the time I emigrated from Ireland, I didn't know a single thing about the famine at all.
Well,
wasn't brought up.
I did. I got a great school teacher in primary school, in fact, that gave me a great love of history. And he was one of the, he was a great storyteller, a great historian. But he told me and told the class all about the famine. And he told us about all the amount of food that was exported. And he was one of the few people that put the population of Ireland at 10 million at that time.
Wow.
Because, you know, the census only recorded 8.175 million people. But, you know, it's not that, there was a recount in a couple of counties, one of them being County Louth, and it found a 10% discrepancy there. So if you apply that to the whole country, and it would be, wouldn't be fair to do so, but because I think in the west of Ireland there would be more. Because the new County Louth, the small county, very low. So put it in 15 or more. So if you put that and the loss of people, like the loss of people that would have got married and had their children and everything else, and the increase in population, you could put it at close to 10 million people. So, you know, I think in 10 years from 45 to 55, or 46 to 56, of 2.5 million people arrived in New York.
Yeah.
So that's a vast amount of people. And there's a vast amount of people lost because the Devon Commission, which took place before the famine, said that almost practically 4 million people were on the verge of hunger every year. Come July, Hungry July, as they called it.
Yeah.
And there's no evidence to support the fact that those people were fed during those years.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sorry, but if you take, you know, songs like, you know, and you've had your own share of them, but take a song like The Fields of Athenry, and it brings us a bit closer to the reality of that. And you mentioned earlier, and your theme has been, you know, that this was not an act of God. This was indeed a famine that shouldn't have happened. But you know, you were talking about can we get the numbers? Can we rely on the numbers? Well, if we were relying, you know, on the British, who had no problem at all in letting us starve to death, you know, and if they become the accountants, I don't know. you couldn't believe the Lord's Prayer from any of them. But
yeah, well, they were gloating at the fact, you know, that it was having such a devastation, such a devastation effect on Ireland. And they were gloating on the fact that, you know, I think it was said in the papers at the time that it was good to see that now there's hardly a delict happen in the USA where you wouldn't find the Native Americans. And Ireland would be soon a place where you won't find the cows, won't find the cows, be all gone away.
Yeah.
So it was built on the fact from early stages that, yes, you know, it's killing a lot of people because they were quite worried about the fact that Ireland had a huge population at the time. And remember that I think England had only like 18 million, something like that. And America was only around about the same, about 20 million or so. So, like, it's a huge population and had a huge effect, you know, in America,
yeah.
Particularly because that was the favorite place where everybody wanted to go. So the story I want to tell in this show about the fact is that it's a story of Irish America. It's a story of how people, you know, ended up there. And most of the time they ended up there in century. They didn't want to leave Ireland. They loved Ireland. But it wasn't like today where people leave and they have a choice. They had no choice back then, either death or get out.
And many, as we know, and indeed through your own stories in song, we know that getting on the cotton ship was indeed, when that becomes the better of two choices, or die on the side of the road, or take your whole family and huddle because you're going to die from starvation, you know, and from, you know, the scourge of the disease, you know, imagine being lucky enough to get on a cotton ship to go somewhere. You know, primarily to America. The depth of that, I think, it's no wonder for some of it. And, you know, you were talking about your teacher, your professor in Dublin. I don't think he would be reading any script, you know, from the curriculum there because I know it definitely wasn't, not only was it not compulsory reading, but God between us and all harm, let's hide that fact as in fact... you know, we had the same to, you know, in the national schools anyway throughout Ireland, particularly in the west of Ireland. Two topics you didn't bother bringing up. One, definitely, geez, don't even think of bringing up the famine, you know, because you might be offending the neighbors or the, you know, the guilt associated with survival and all the rest. And then, of course, the next one, you know, would be, you know, the 1916, the songs that about Ireland's, you know, becoming a divided nation, but with, you know, that was a stay away from that too while you're at it. So, in our national school system, and I have to be careful here by my tongue because my father and mother were school teachers in the national school in Ireland, but somehow when we came to Ireland's history and we came up to 1916 or 1915, now that'll be close enough to go in now with you, it's again a tribute to the Wolf Tones, I think, to take and to weave into their music and song, you know, because otherwise there, you know, those events have been relegated to the ash heap, and you have to come and drag them out and actually make sure that you do that in an entertaining fashion rather than, you know, rely on those who might pick out a book from the library.
Yeah, well, it has to be entertaining, of course. And, you know, like, since you'd be amazed at the amount of young people that come to our shows in Ireland, in Scotland, in Wales. Like, we go to shows in the Barrow Lounge in Glasgow, and there'd be over 2,500 people there. All young kids, you probably wouldn't find any over 25.
Wow.
But they love the Irish story, and I think one of the reasons that they love the Wolf Tones is that we tell the story, but don't tell it anywhere else. It's somewhat banned around the place.
Yeah.
Don't tell that story. I remember Luke Dudley Edwards, who is now official unionist, she said last week, but she said she came up to one of our shows in England, in London, in fact, and there's about 2,500-3,000 people at the National in London. And she came up, she asked to see me. And I received her gracefully and everything else, bought her a drink. And she said, she turned around, she said to me, you should be ashamed of yourself, she said, riling up all them people in this hall, all young people. And she said, I said, hold on, Ruth. You wrote a story about Padraig Pearse, and if I was Padraig Pearse, I'd come back and haunt you, because you never told the truth. You focused on everything you could find negative about the man. And that's the kind of woman she was. Now, when the Fanon Memorial came around, she got a lot of press. She got a lot of radio play and radio time and everything else. But her focus was, famine was nothing. The focus was, oh yeah, that's just the way it was back then.
Yeah.
Now, they wouldn't let another opinion counteract that, you know what I mean? So I wanted to counteract that and say, look, hold on, you're not telling the truth to the Irish people here. They were trying to subdue passion of the Irish people against
Absolutely.
The Irish people. The Irish people are strong and mature enough to understand their history. And it should never be denied, because we're not stupid people. And we can take it as adults, we know that it was a terrible scene and everything else. But I'm not going to go out and shoot somebody in this generation for what generations ago did. But I do like to hear an apology. I do like to understand. I've got cousins in England, as probably everybody has. But, you know, and... my cousin said, oh, my granddaughter is going to Liverpool University, and she's studying history, and she's studying Irish history. And she told me the other day, she said, there was no famine and the amount of food was taken away. Now, many people in England don't know that, but it was just that she went to take a degree in history, and somehow Liverpool is stronger in the art of story than other universities. So the numerous people in England were shocked in England when a program came on that said that, you know, that health and the famine in Ireland were, but the Irish people during that also potato. And there were writing in the papers and getting on the internet.
You know, Brian, Brian Warfield, my guest friend, the Wolf Tones, kind of very limited in a concert engagement here with, of course, as you can imagine, they will play a couple of nights in Boston. But I want to get, before we give the hard sell here for tickets, I wouldn't want people, much as, you know, I have a personal stake in, you know, in your brain, on this 175th anniversary, the story of the famine in song. We wouldn't want to leave, you know, our listeners, or anybody for that matter, with the impression that, you know, that's what the entire concert is about. Because there are people, you know, you have a pusher, an agent over here, Ed Redburn, and, you know, we love the fact that the Wolf Tones, to many of us, indeed known as the Tones, you have your concert will be more of what you've done for the last 60 years. It will be a great variety of songs.
Oh, absolutely.
Many of which the Wolf Tones have not only taken the lead, but your compositions, all of it is terrific. So we're talking about intermission, and then on the second half of your program, just give us an idea of you know, just so many songs and, you know, hits throughout the world with your songs. How do you pick the next batch for your concerts?
Yeah, the way I look at it now, I'd like to do all the great hits of the Wolf Tones over the years. And they're the ones that, you know, we're probably known for. Now, some of the first half will contain some of those songs because they're very relevant to a whole situation. So the first half won't be all unknown songs. There will be songs, you know, that you know very well, like,
right.
You know, things like, you know, Hibernia, which has become a great hit, You'll Never Beat the Irish, you know, things like Irish Eyes and songs like that.
Yeah.
So we have a song then finishing off the first part. It's Thank God for America. And we'll be starting off the second part with God Save Ireland. And then we'll be moving on to things like Grace and, you know, songs like Step Symphony, songs like Nation Once Again, We're on the Road. You know, all those great songs that we've had over the years.
Right.
So the concert will be roughly about 2.5 hours. The first part will be an hour and a quarter, and the second half will be roughly the same. So it's accompanied by a slideshow. And the slideshow brings the whole songs to history.
Yeah.
And all the thing will have vocals from the period of time. Like, you know, just say, like, it'll be illustrated.
Oh, yeah.
Like a wonderful...
A tremendous addition, and something I think that, again, much as we love and admire the Wolf Tones, not only for, but taking songs again, like you mentioned there, On the One Road, and so forth. When we hear that song, it is so associated with the Wolf Tones that we have to assume that some of these songs that you've taken out of the tea chest, out of the barrel, where, you know, everybody said, well, that's enough of that one. You've taken and made those covers, as it were, in your music. So a lot of people will not associate songs like On the One Road as being, you know, a song, a classic, until you hear the version of the Wolf Tones. And I'm, again, we could talk for the next hour, and I still wouldn't be able to cover the success, but all I know is that we are looking forward very much to your coming to New York, and also to commemorate the 175th anniversary of the Irish Hunger, the Great Irish Hunger on Gustav Moore. And I have more than a passing interest in that, because when you come to New York, and for those who come into New York City, the Irish Famine Memorial in Battery Park City, you know, again is a very popular spot, a recreation of a famine house, a famine field, you know, the ruins as they are today. And it comes from my home parish of Ahimath. Brian,
that's amazing.
Yeah, and thank you. But again, Ed Radburn now was wondering when we'll be wondering when we're getting around to selling tickets. Never mind this, but that's the way he is. He can get cranky after a bit. March 15th. Yeah. He's a lovely fella, but, you know, he'd cut you off in a minute and say, how many tickets are you guys selling there? Okay, it's March 15th and 16th. The Wolf Tones, friends, two and only two performances in New York City to mark again the 175th anniversary of the Great Irish Famine, a tribute with a tribute concert at Town Hall. Book your concert date now, and because this is going to be a sellout. So, you know, Town Hall is located smack in the middle of Manhattan at 43rd Street, and between 6th and Broadway. The Town Hall, you can get your tickets by, go to the Town Hall website, that's townhallnyc.org. Or Ticketmaster, and Ticketmaster, of course, Ticketmaster.com. Enjoy Ireland's prolific and legendary balladeers, the Wolf Tones, and I'm speaking to himself, Brian Warfield. Look forward to having you.
Adrian, I'm looking forward to meeting other friends again once again. Over the years, made some wonderful friends over on the Tri-State area.
Sure.
And I'm really looking forward to performing once again for all of it. It's been locked down for the last 3 years, so we had to get out of New York fast the last time we were there.
Right.
So, I look forward to that. And I had emails from people who were coming up from, Florida for the show. And, they said, we're really looking forward to the show. So
right.
People are coming from all over, you know.
Yeah, groupies.
We have one other show in Boston, and that's at the Strand Theatre. And the Strand Theatre is a beautiful old theatre. The Town Hall is a fantastic theatre as well.
Yeah.
We played it, I think the last time we played for the Irish immigrants, and we were trying to get green cards, remember, at the time. And I think we gave it all to them, which is a charity do for them. But, the Town Hall was fantastic. We played it many times, great atmosphere. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to that great Irish audience and New York audience. From anywhere around here, all very, very welcome. And I guarantee you get a great show.
Yeah, it's great. And as I say, you had a lot of mileage on you by the time I started my radio show in 1970, but I remember that fairly early in my programs. I played a lot of Wolf Tones music, and then lo and behold, one time you were in New York and came to the studio, and I was smart.
Yeah, I remember.
Great, and you're welcome back, of course.